Good evening, everybody. This is James McCanny with My Science Hour, October 1st, 2020, and a lot of topics to cover tonight. I'll be talking directly to K-12 parents, students, and university students, parents, and grandparents. This is a quest that I am on right now to try and educate the public about science. Do you know what? We really, really need good scientists in the United States. And I hate to tell you this, but the crop of scientists and engineers that are out there now, there's some really good ones. There's some really good ones doing a lot of good things. But we are faltering drastically in the world because of the dearth of good scientific education. And there's a lot of good colleges out there, et cetera. But the professors, and let's take a look at textbooks for science in grade school, they're terrible. They are absolutely terrible. And in a lot of cases, they're teaching things that couldn't possibly be true. So what we need are parents to literally take the reins and say, we've got to understand this. Let's take a look at the future of outer space, for example. What you're being fed in the news about space, et cetera, and NASA going to go to the moon in 2030, I mean, it's all lollipops and roses fairy tales. It's just absurd. It's absurd. The space program always should have been about getting people of all ages, including young people, into space. So what do they have? Another program where they are allegedly going to send people, two or three astronauts, to the moon in 10 years. Some people say by 2024, that'll get put off. That's called moving the carrot. Put it close enough that it sounds like it's in the near future, but when that date comes, they'll push that off and keep pushing it off. And literally, the majority of people working in these space programs will be retiring on the golf course, buying their house in Phoenix or up in Sun City or who knows where, and retired and playing golf. They will never, ever be part of a program that goes to the moon. You know, we need real scientists. Let me tell you what's going on in China right now. I'll give you examples of China and Russia. China has entire cities built around engineers, physicists, astrophysicists, chemists that deal with their space program. They have the entire space program charted out, and they're going for it in a big way. They're going to have a lot of people in outer space. They're developing the technology. They've already purchased a lot of technology directly from Russia. So they jumped into the space race by simply buying technology. Because Russia was strapped for money. And so anyway, Russia is right now building a great big rocket. It just had a test flight. It's for their lunar program. But the United States is way behind the curve, way behind the curve. If it were not for a company called SpaceX and its innovation and work and private money, the space program would not exist in the United States. But what do we need? We need students that understand outer space, because here is an announcement that just came out this week that there's a lander on the moon that was sent there by China, and it has a German-built radiation detector, and what it's doing, it's detecting the radiation levels on the moon. And you would think, well, doggone it, NASA went there in the 1960s. There was sure no problem with radiation then. All those astronauts went and came back. They were healthy. They lived to ripe old ages. And, you know, so what's the big issue with radiation? Well, now they're actually measuring radiation, and they're going, oh, it's kind of a problem. It's kind of a problem. But you notice they never talk about the Van Allen belt radiation. It's typical fake news where they say something, but they leave something really important out. And that's where we are with science today. So what we need are students who understand the electrical nature of the solar system and universe and understand so that they can solve some of the big problems that we're facing, because radiation is a problem dealing, it comes from the electrical nature of the solar system, something that current scientific, the engineers, etc., don't understand. People are selling tickets to go to the moon. They don't even have the first clue on how to deal with the radiation problem, and they don't even have details of the radiation problem. The primary problem is with X-rays. And what are X-rays? X-rays are like light, just very energetic light. X-rays are used, imagine you took a really powerful light and you put it up to your hand in a dark room. If it was powerful enough, you'd be able to see your bone structure, etc. And with X-rays, it's just a more powerful form of light that literally goes through all of your tissue and bone, etc., and it's blocked a little more by the bone. Therefore, you get an image, and on a photographic plate, or now it's done by the same process as the Xerox machine, something I worked on in my master's degree at Tulane University. That's what I did my master's degree research on, funded by the National Institute of Health. But the problem with X-rays is that they destroy tissue. And there was this one little ad that was like a little video that they were showing, and they kind of have this like little squirrely guy's voice in there, and he's going, and it's all animated. That's the thing about, for decades, NASA has just, whenever they put something out, it's an animation. Absolutely ridiculous. But at any rate, X-rays destroy tissue, and that's why you have to be very careful about dosage of X-rays. The X-ray that you get when you go to the doctor or the dentist is very small, but still it's enough to make an image. But when you get out into outer space, the X-ray intensity can be very high. And they're not measuring that. Also, that's one of the biggest problems when you get into the Van Allen belts. It's not the charged particles that are the problem, because they're absorbed. They can be absorbed by materials. What happens is these are relativistic particles. So when they hit something, especially metal that's in the spacecraft, there's a lot of metal in the spacecraft, or other dense materials, plastics, etc., they create X-rays. And so that's where the problem is. That's where the problem is, because you're in this basically X-ray cooker. And you'll notice that nobody since the Apollo program, or since the alleged Apollo program, nobody has gone outside of Earth orbit. So how can these people claim that they're going to the moon and collecting money for this when they won't go up above a couple hundred miles above the Earth's surface? And they have not and the belief is that they never went above there, and they had no ability to. When I worked with Russian scientists in the mid-1990s, they told me stories about back in the 1960s, they had sent people to the moon. They had not to land on the moon, but just to orbit the moon and come back, a very simple process. Because if you can go into low Earth orbit, theoretically, you should be able to go to the moon, orbit the moon, and then just come back, and then slow down and come back into the atmosphere. But when the astronauts, cosmonauts they call them, when they came back from their little journey, they were dead. And with severe radiation burns. And that's why the Russians told me, they said that NASA never went to the moon. I have a statement about this on my webpage. It basically states that NASA has made a scientific claim that they went to the moon, and there's no second or third independent party verification of this. A lot of people have been around the moon and taken pictures of the moon. Nobody except NASA claims that they have seen anything relative to the Apollo landing sites. Other countries have taken extensive pictures, etc. But nobody has ever produced an independent verification of these so-called lunar landing sites. But the point is, the reason I'm telling students is that we need good scientists to solve the problems of going into outer space. And like I say, there's some good scientists, but I'll tell you something, the majority of university professors are asleep at the throttle. And now I want to be very clear that, say, when you go to college and you're studying chemistry or biology or you're studying physics, in those courses, that is sound, well-established physics principles, mathematics, etc. It's when you start getting into the things like geology, which is subjective, geology of other planets, where we really haven't even been there yet. We've only, say, taken some pictures from a distance. And geologists already saying, oh, well, that's 4.5 billion years old. Well, that's complete lunacy. They have no idea how old things are or where they came from. So unfortunately, we're stuck in this quagmire of old thoughts, concepts that were around, some of them hundreds of years ago. And so we need students. First of all, that's why I have produced my education course, is so that students can pick this apart and understand what is fact, what is speculation, what is complete lunacy, and then start filling in the pieces. So it's very important, and this is to parents too. You want your kids to be scientists, or the kids want to be scientists, I should say. I hope parents are not pushing their kids to be something that the kids don't want to be. But I'll tell you, I've had people call me up and say, you know, I don't want to be a physicist. It's too much work. And I'll tell you something, to be good at it, like I am, I'm very good in physics, mathematics. All of my records show it. All of my commercial jobs that I've had show it. And but it takes a lot of work. This did not just... I would believe I'd have talent also in that area, but it did not come easily. You have to be dedicated, and in a sense, you have to live and breathe it. When I was going to college, it was day and night, daily, 7 days a week, for years. And during the summer, I didn't let up. I kept studying, etc. So, to be a good scientist, you have to be very, very dedicated. And you have that in China. You have that in Russia. Russia has a tremendous space program. As I said, they have a moon rocket, a big rocket that they're testing now. And they have scientists. I know a lot of scientists from Russia. They work very hard. They don't get paid much. It's not a lucrative career like it is in the United States, but they do it because of the love of the subject, and that's what they want to do. They just are enthralled by this. So, number one, you have to be very dedicated. You have to be willing to put a lot of time into it. And when you have a problem, go to somebody. Say, hey, I don't understand this. I hit roadblocks many times in my education, and instead of just going by it and saying, oh, well, I don't have to know that. No, you have to fill in every piece. And if there's something you're missing, something you don't understand, go and get help. Go say, hey, I don't understand this. It's complicated, and you don't want to miss any pieces. Once you're going up through the stages of mathematics, through algebra and geometry and trigonometry, and then calculus, and, you know, on and on, if you keep going in mathematics. My advice, too, is whether you're in chemistry or biology or physics, take a lot of mathematics, because that really is the backbone. And too many times where professionals fall down, for example, geologists don't have a good background in physics and mathematics. So they propose all kinds of wild, goofy things that could not possibly be true. So here is out of this little video I was telling you about NASA, projecting that they're going to go to the moon, they're going, oh, well, gee, all of a sudden there's radiation out there. Big surprise. I've been saying that for decades, literally. And then the clincher was they said the astronauts might have to take radiation pills, that some kind of pill is going to help them deal with radiation. Well, there's many different kinds of radiation. One of them would be, say, heavy radioisotopes, like, say, uranium or something like that. Well, that's not the problem. Unless you got a stick of uranium in your space capsule, that's probably not going to be an issue. Also, high-energy particles of themselves can be an issue, but the real problem is those high-energy particles converting their energy into X-rays. And those X-rays, let me tell you, you would have to have a lot of lead to reduce the amount of X-rays. So taking a pill is not going to help you deal with radiation from X-rays, because the X-ray is damaging the cell. It is destroying the cell. The X-ray comes through, and that's why it causes cancer, because the cells are destroyed, and then the cell next to that goes, I don't see the cell next to me anymore. So I'm going to start producing more cells. And that's what, when you cut yourself, say you cut your hand and it starts to heal, that's the natural process of healing, is that the cells go, hey, I don't see the cell over there anymore. I'm going to start producing cells, until the cells start recognizing that they're touching other cells again. And that forms a scar, and that's what the healing process is. So if an X-ray goes through your hand and destroys a lot of cells along the way, then what's going to happen is the cells on the other side, each side of that where the X-ray went through, it's going to go, I don't see the cell over there. I'm going to start producing more cells, and that's where the cancer comes from. Taking a pill, forget it. It is not going to cure radiation damage from X-rays. Okay, so once again, we need students to understand these topics and to mitigate them, to understand how to mitigate X-ray radiation and other forms of radiation. I'm part of a group. This is a worldwide group. It's related to scientists. Scientists belong to this group. And I've been making comments on this group's webpage. And as it turns out, I'm just appalled at the very feeble level of knowledge of scientists in general around the world. It's rather pathetic. It's rather pathetic. And I'm just going to say that because these are people that get paid. You know, they're living in universities. Possibly some of them are retired. Some of them are young people with a degree. And I noticed this too when I was at, say, American Geophysical Union meetings. And I would talk to people and I'd go, my goodness, these people are so naive. They just don't know anything. And they, you know, they come up with statements that just boggle the mind. They're so they're just kind of like in dreamland. That's all I can say. So it's one of the problems with the university system in the United States. The engineering acumen in other countries far surpasses the United States. I'll tell you that. And it's from decades of basically being asleep, of repeating and repeating the same thing. So that's why students have to be really, they have to educate themselves. And this is the point I wanted to get to, is that a school is going to do something for you. But the real question is, what is it not going to do for you? What it's not going to do is educate you. It's not going to teach you how to think. What you're going to do in a school is learn how to repeat what the professor or teacher says. If you do that, you get an A, you get a little pat on the head, and if you get enough A's, you know, maybe you'll get a scholarship to go to the next school where you will not learn anything either. So the only way you're going to really learn anything, and, you know, I'll be honest with you, even when I was in physics classes with other people who were good at physics, nobody attacked it like I did. Really understanding and going way beyond what the book is trying to teach, understanding concepts, etc., and then getting a feel for how things work, how big are things, how big are forces, how, you know, comparing gravitational to electrical forces, and understanding that that's not the only criteria that you use. For example, if you take, say, charge and mass, there's a common misbelief based on actually a truism within physics that if you take, say, two electrons or an electron and a proton, if you look at the gravitational attraction between their masses, it's tremendously small compared to the electrical attraction or repulsion. In the case of two electrons, repulsion. In the case of an electron and proton, attraction. And it's huge compared to the gravitational attraction. But most electrical situations in outer space are neutral. And they do, it's that way because when electrical objects are in free outer space, there are other free charges that quickly come and neutralize them. And so you have to be careful about making statements about electricity in outer space based on a very simplistic view of just an electron and a proton. That doesn't apply to outer space. And so, for example, say you have a tennis ball that has a surface charge. Okay, well, that surface charge then is covering the surface. And now let's say you have the same proportional amount of charge on a basketball. Basketball is much bigger. Then, because the surface area goes as the square of the radius, but the volume goes as the cube of the radius, it turns out that gravity overtakes the electrical charge once you get up to something the size of a tennis ball. And that's something that, and so when you get up to something the size of a planet, if there are charged activities going on, electrical charge, then they're minute compared to gravity. It's called charge to mass ratio, and I talk about this in my books. I talk a lot about this concept. So that there are people running around the internet putting up YouTube videos making ridiculous claims about electrical things going on in outer space that simply are not true at all because they don't understand. They don't understand physics. But at any rate, what I'm saying is that students have to learn what are you going to learn in school and what are you going to have to teach yourself by very difficult just day after day after day going beyond. And that's something I did, and that's why I excel in just about everything I do, the prime numbers. Just imagine somebody commented to me that in the world of wind energy, imagine all the tens of thousands of engineers who went through school and worked on, and then they got jobs and they worked for General Electric or Vesta or Siemens, or one of the big companies that makes three-blade wind turbines. And all of these scientists and engineers worked and got paid, and they went to college, and there were university professors who taught this subject in engineering classes, and not a single one of them understood that what they were looking at and working with didn't work. I mean, it's truly astounding. But it's a good example of how people simply repeat what they're told. They simply repeat what's in the textbook without thinking. It's absolutely amazing. So what I'm saying to students and parents is you got to turn off the TV, phone, text, you know, text messaging, SMS, all of the different things that are, different things on computer that are constantly popping up to distract you. You've got to get rid of all of that so that you can sit down for long periods of time and concentrate Because if all you're doing is learning what's in the book and answering the questions in the back of the book, what's going to happen is you're going to end up being a very mediocre scientist or engineer. That's simply the way it is. And you're going to follow what other people have told you, and you're not going to be able to do anything creative because you're simply designed to follow what the status quo is telling you. So very important, understand, students, what are you going to get out of school and what are you not going to get out of school? And what you're not going to get out of school is an education. You're not going to be taught how to think, and you're not going to be taught about your own personal life, like your spirit, how to reconcile your spirit, etc. How are you going to do that? I talk about that in my coursework, so I'm not going to repeat it here. But understand, too, is that professors standing up at the front of the room 99 times out of 100 doesn't want to be there, and he's collecting a paycheck. And I just wanted to mention something else to students and parents, because you have to deal with this, too, when your kids are growing up, is that, and I'm going to give some examples out of my own life here, when things are not going your way and you go, just, you know, why is this stuff happening to me? You know, I don't want this to happen in my life. I want to go this direction. And no matter how hard you go in that direction, something's pushing you in another direction. Let me tell you something. If you're really a student of the spiritual world and understanding you and your connection to the whole universe, you don't always get your way, and only after decades sometimes, this is in my case, I'll speak for myself, and I think it's true of everybody else. If you're really somebody that's seeking to live a really interesting life, in other words, if you want to just go to school, get good grades, get a job, you know, go golfing, then if you want to live that I would call it a mediocre lifestyle, you can do that. That's great. But if you want a really interesting life, then what you have to do is you have to break out of the mold. And it's not going to be easy. You're going to do a lot of things that are very difficult. You're going to have a lot of difficult situations. You're going to have a lot of people trying to push you in different directions. And things are not always going to go your way. And so, it's something you have to accept, in that understand that you may not understand why you're being pushed in a certain direction at this point in your life. And no matter how hard you try to go this other direction, something just keeps pushing you this way. And it'll probably only be 5, 10, 20 years later that you realize, you go, oh my goodness, yeah, I'm sure glad I didn't go that direction. But you didn't know it at the time. Okay, just a quick mention. There's a car company called Nikola. This is just amazing. This company came out of nowhere, and you know, there's the car company called Tesla, and Elon Musk, and they are just, I mean, they're the only car company that's profitable. They've revolutionized the whole auto industry. You know, a single company called Tesla. But then this company, Nikola, because, of course, Nikola Tesla, Nikola is first name of Tesla, they were trying to do some kind of a copycat. And so a lot of people invested in this company, but they did not have any design work. They didn't have any engineering drawings even. They just had some kind of a concept of a car they were going to sell. And people were investing in this like crazy until finally this past week. And this thing, even 2 weeks ago, was going bananas. People were investing and throwing huge amounts of money into it, and all of a sudden, it just folded. And it was air. In fact, there's an expression that selling air. Well, this company was selling vacuum. They were selling less than air. Anyway, I just find it amazing. And then there's companies like mine that have a real product, the wing generator, and will solve the world energy problem. And it's, these investors Well, I guess the end story here is that the investors are just idiots. And I've been in a lot of meetings with investors and venture capitalists, and they'll tell me, they said, well, the reason we got to get so much from your company, percentage and ownership, et cetera, is because all of our other investments have failed. Well, they're a bunch of complete screaming idiots. They invest in stuff that there's no possible way it could succeed. Like this company, Nikola. Just imagine all the people that invested big amounts of money and small amounts of money in that company, and there was nothing there. It was like a hole in the ground where you throw your money. Here's an important thing about the coronavirus thing, and there's a lot of people covering this, but this is extremely important, and I'm going to just tell you, do not take the test. And if there's a vaccine that comes out, do not take the vaccine. And there are many reasons for this. The vaccine is something you do not want in your body. But there are other issues. What if, for example, you don't have anything and this whole thing is fake or whatever, and all of a sudden you get a positive test back? This could ruin your life because all of a sudden you are going to be branded for life. And this PCR test is not a test for COVID-19 or coronavirus or anything. It's just an elevated antibody test. And that could be from, you know, you could have anything. You could have an infection of some kind. You could have cancer. You could just be old and have a weak immune system and test positive. But then, hey, you're going to be branded because you have a positive test. So anyway, that's a social reason for not taking any test. Because, it's not going to tell you if you've got COVID-19 or no. In fact, there's a lot of people, there's a group of 100 and I forget how many thousand doctors who came out and said this whole thing is a fake pandemic, that there is no such virus even. More and more people are saying that. And I was criticized on a radio show the other day. And somebody calls in, well, it's been tested and there's the genome and they have it, No, they don't. They don't. Believe me, they do not have this thing even isolated. And so there's a lot of craziness going around. But the other thing is, not only getting a false positive, you could get a negative and you do have something, some kind of a virus, etc. But the other thing is that there's evidence that the tests actually have the virus in it. So they're inflicting the virus into people, or a virus, using the test, because there were studies done years and years ago showing that one of the most effective ways of delivering a vaccine is with a test swab pushed up on the palate of your mouth, way in the back or up in your nose. Those two places are where the body is very susceptible towards invasion of viruses. So where do you think that they would put a swab if they were going to infect people? There's evidence that the flu shots, a lot of people are getting sick because they took the flu shot, and that actually had a COVID-19 variant in it, the most recent flu shots. So at any rate, don't take the vaccine. And as far as just a quick comment, the debate the other night, I didn't watch it. It's, for me, it's just goofiness, political pandering. But the problem is that everybody's talking about a vaccine. And everybody should get a vaccine. And if you get the vaccine, oh, it's just going to, everything's going to be way better. Everybody's trying to push this. No, that's just going to be the first vaccine of many. And it's going to start killing people, just like regular vaccines. Okay, 4 years ago today, yesterday, September 30th, the Rosetta lander, it was called the Philae lander, it was part of the Rosetta mission to a comet 67P, and the Philae lander landed on the surface of a comet, this comet 67P. That was 4 years ago yesterday. And they didn't find any ice. They didn't find any snow. They didn't find any water. Nothing was coming off the nucleus. So how could this be a dirty snowball? What they did find was organic chemicals in the form of like a sand type of material. It was mainly composites of carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, and some other minerals put together. But basically, that's what was on the surface. So the other thing is I contacted some of the scientific staff on that mission, and I said, when you were looking at the comet from a distance, what is the closest to the nucleus that you found water? And they said about 10 kilometers, and if you got 100 kilometers away, there was a lot more water. So they didn't see anything coming off the nucleus. Yeah, so fake science news. And there again, students have to be very aware of this, because if you went into an astronomy classroom or any other classroom related to science, some professor is going to repeat the idea that, oh, these comets are dirty snowballs. They're not dirty snowballs. There's no snow, ice, water, nothing on the nucleus of these small ones. Absolutely amazing. Okay, I'm going to do a little bit of logic or a little logic lesson here. And it amounts to the following. Let's take what is known as a straw man. A straw man is an interesting, it's a technique used a lot of times, sometimes in politics, sometimes in debates, or sometimes in people just discussing topics, where you take something to the extreme and therefore change the original meaning. And so that's the basic definition of a straw man. So this is going on all the time in the science news. And I want to give an example of this, because I've been giving examples of this for literally months now. And the reason this is appearing in fake science news is because they're trying to drum up in the public's mind the idea that a solar flare could do a lot of damage to Earth, or an asteroid could collide into Earth and cause a lot of damage. Well, both of those things are true. Both of those things are true, but we don't have any knowledge right now. There's no knowledge of anything that's going to, say, hit Earth and in the near future. But the other thing is the solar flaring. Right now, we're dealing with an extreme minimum of solar activity. We're in a solar minimum. We just started to come out and go into the next solar cycle. And this is simply based on sunspot counts. So it's not really related directly to solar activity, but there's when you have sunspots, then you tend to have more coronal mass ejections or emissions from the sun in terms of charged particles. So right now, you would not expect to find any activity from the sun that is abnormal or large or great or superior in any form. So right now, they're trying to drum this up in the public's mind, however, in spite of the fact that you would not expect anything. They are trying to drum it up in the public's mind that all of a sudden there's some kind of a big issue with the sun, like it's going to just explode one of these days. And the reason I say this is because I started seeing these trends where there was no news, and they're creating news about things that really are not even in the works. They're not even expected under any normal circumstances. And so what they're doing is it's called a straw man. And so what I've been reporting on is that NASA and NOAA, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and NASA, our illustrious space agency, are planning a false flag event based on a false reporting of a solar flare, and then there would be manipulated weather, and potentially taking down the grid. And this would be to throw off at the very last minute the election, because if people, the electricity's out, they can't go vote. And if they do this in areas where, for example, Trump would be potentially winning, then, and I'm not saying this in a political sense, I'm saying this because of what the deep state has been doing, to trying to destroy the economy, the hurricanes that were manipulated to go into Arkansas to destroy the rice crop. I've talked about this in previous radio shows. But what they're doing is, I call it priming the media pump and trying to put out stories that imply there's going to be big danger of solar flare activity. And so it happened again yesterday on spaceweather.com, which is a Rothschild-owned and managed news service for weather, fake news at its highest. And they're always talking about auroras. But this time they were talking about minor oscillations in the Earth's magnetic field. And this is due to the interaction with solar wind that's coming into Earth all the time. So if you went out and you took a very sensitive compass and you put it down on a table, let it sit there, you'll see that it varies. The needle actually just moves around if you have a very sensitive compass. And the needle just moves around. And so what's going on there? Well, the Earth's magnetic field is constantly changing because the upper ionosphere is part of that magnetic field, and it's not simply due to this mysterious magnet that's somehow locked in Earth's interior. So what the story is that recently some people have measured minor variations in Earth's magnetic field, and this is by putting a compass, literally a sensitive compass, on a table and watching it, and realizing that what they call the east-west component, there's the north component, and then the east-west component is what makes the needle go back and forth, and from its position of true magnetic north, not the true north of Earth, which is based on the rotation of the Earth, but the magnetic field of Earth is always different 99.9% of the time. Okay, so the title, I'll read the title of this article. As I said, this appeared yesterday, September 30th, in spaceweather.com. It says, "Solar Wind Rattles Earth's Magnetic Field." Now, if that word rattles, if somebody rattles your cage, it's like... It's an expression like it seems to be or imply significance, something more than just a little bit. So if you were going to talk about a very slight variation, you would say something like solar wind provides extremely small variation in Earth's magnetic field. And that's the real story. But if it rattles Earth's magnetic field, that implies something big. So they have some joker that put in some data on a variation in Earth's magnetic field over the course of, I think it was about the 27th and the 28th of September. And then they relate it to a solar storm, which is, maybe it's true, maybe it's not true. But that's the straw man right there. Because what are they doing? They're trying to make it sound like this solar storm really was something significant when it was not, when there was no story there at all. And so if you take a logical disposition here, if you take a logical manner of looking at this, someone might say, well, if there's a solar storm, then there are auroras and variations in the Earth's magnetic field. Okay, but it's not true to say, turn that around and say, well, if you see variations in the Earth's magnetic field or auroras, that means there's a solar storm. That's not true, because there are other causes of auroras. For example, the Earth is caught up in its own electrical discharge of the solar capacitor. And when we go in the month of August, there's the combination of Earth's own discharge of the solar capacitor and the return current sheet that occurs in the solar system in the month of August, where Earth is passing through in the month of August. And so having auroras... Let me explain something. We have auroras around the North Pole every day of the year, whether there's a solar storm or not. And so auroras do not imply solar storms. And so a few weeks ago, I reported that they were trying to build a story where some joker was going back in time and looking for auroras that were visible. In other words, reported by people in the, say, the northern states or farther south, and trying to imply that, well, even though we didn't have technology to detect a solar storm, there must have been a solar storm. So we'll just say there was a solar storm. Not valid logic. And now they're trying to do it with minor variations in Earth's magnetic field, which happens every day. Auroras happen every day. In August, we have the return current sheet of the solar system, and that is the main driver of auroras in the month of August. August is aurora month. So it's not unusual to find auroras far south in the northern states, you know, the Montana, Idaho, Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, in those northern states. It's not unusual to find auroras in the month of August. And they're sometimes very prominent. And also the same situation with magnetic fields. If you give it on a given day, you can put a sensitive magnet on a table, and on a given day there will be variations, sometimes very slight ones, sometimes more. But that doesn't mean we're having a solar storm. So that's the straw man. And they're using the straw man incorrect logic to try and build a story that somehow we're in for this big solar event, if you can see what I mean. So I've been thumping on this because this is the game plan to the final nail in the coffin, so to speak, to disrupt the upcoming election. And so there's going to be all kinds of things going on in October to disrupt the election, keeping people from getting to the ballot box in certain areas. And this will be based on false flag events. So anyway, I just wanted to make that clear. So students, especially our parents, have to understand that we live in a world of lies, fake news, cover-ups, and deception. So what we have to do, and by the way, they were targeting students. They target students and young people, because if they can control them, hey, game over. The country's done. We're not going to have a country anymore because the students, you know, are going to be so stupid that they can't understand anything. So that's why I'm really taking time out of my show to educate the public. So this is not just students. This is parents, grandparents, everybody that, even if you don't have kids in school, this is for you, because you have to understand the level of deception going on today, and science is at the very core of all of it. Okay, so now that I'm talking about auroras, let me just explain what causes an aurora and also related magnetic field changes. And so if you take a compass, this is a magnetic compass. I'm not talking about the compass that you would have as an application on your cell phone. That is not a magnetic compass, because you don't have a magnet in your phone. What you have is GPS, and you can orient your phone and it'll give you the cardinal directions or anything in between. It'll tell you the number of degrees your phone is pointing away from, say, true north. A magnetic compass we're talking about here has a little needle that balances on a pin inside of a glass housing, so wind and other air currents cannot affect it. And so you set it on a stable place that's horizontal, and that needle will move back and forth because there's a little magnetized piece of material on there, on that needle, and will align with the local magnetic field. But the local magnetic field is built up of not only iron and nickel that's locked into the Earth's surface that has a magnetic field, but it's also, the magnetic field is partly built by electrical currents. some of them in the Earth, some of them up in the atmosphere, some of them in the ionosphere, some of them at the Van Allen belts. And then there's another plasma magnetic field that's built up by electrical currents outside of that. So you have this multi-layer magnetic field that then, if that's changing, then you can record it on your compass. So if there's a solar storm, then it might vary quite a bit. And you can actually see this. And most people think, like, if you're taught to use a compass as a Boy Scout, you're not really taught about solar flares. At least we were not. It was not something commonly understood when I was a kid. Of course, that's a long time ago. Maybe now they're teaching kids this cause of variations in the magnetic field. But the end result is that when you're near auroras, if you look up in the sky and you see auroras, well, that's due to electrical currents that are coming into the atmosphere, and the electrons or protons, whichever type of aurora it is, as they come in, they excite the energy levels in the atoms and molecules that are in the air and cause the atoms to basically give off a light photon. And this display of electricity coming into the atmosphere is what we call auroras. There are other forms of atmospheric electrical phenomena. Noctilucent clouds is another one. There's also the sprites and elves which occur above thunderstorms and lightning itself. These are all reminiscent of electrical conditions that are being driven from outside the planet. So the question is, where does this electrical current come from? And that's something I talk about in my books. One of them is the solar wind, but that's usually a minimal part of this. The solar wind actually rarely comes near Earth. Because of our magnetic field, the solar wind is made up of charged particles coming out from the sun, positive and negative charges. So when they see Earth's magnetic field, the positive charges are bent in one direction and the negative charges are bent in the other direction, and they flow around. So Earth really doesn't see that much in terms of electrical currents except at the poles. And what happens is that charged particles will move down the magnetic field lines unobstructed. And so they come in and create this beautiful light show. If you go to spaceweather.com, there's a picture of the, on the left-hand column, there's one thing that is interesting, is they post the, it's called the oval, it's the aurora oval around the North Pole of Earth, and it's always there, and it has kind of a gap in it. It's kind of interesting. And this is constantly rotating around planet Earth based on the time of day, etc. And so during the course of the night, or you can actually see these in the daytime sometimes, they're so bright, but during the course of the night, this aurora oval rotates around Earth, and it's relative to the electrical current coming into the North Pole of Earth and then also the South Pole as auroras. But it's not as popular because there's not many people down there. There's not many people near the South Pole. You have a very limited population in extreme South America and literally no population except for a few research stations in Antarctica at the South Pole. So the main interest in aurora activity is at the North Pole. So in a nutshell, it's the electrical currents that are causing magnetic fields that you're registering on your magnetic compass. And so that's something, if you hear of a magnetic storm, get your compass, the magnetic compass, not the compass on your phone, because that's not going to interact with the magnetic field. It's not a magnetic compass. It's a GPS compass. And so get your a magnetic compass and set it on a table and just sit and watch it jump back and forth, and that's due to the electrical activity, the electrical currents going by Earth outside of planet Earth. Okay, a few minutes left in this program. I just want to remind people that on my webpage, I have my educational program that's been up for a couple of weeks. And this is for a message to grandparents. If you're interested in helping your youth, your grandchildren, buy them this program. It takes about probably a year to 2 years to complete, depending on how fast they go through it. It's really a tremendous amount of material. And it not only teaches science, but it teaches them how to think, how to recognize garbage science that they're being taught in school, and how to step above that. It teaches them how to be individuals. It teaches them also about recognizing atheistic science education that's being pawned off on the public in the schools. This is one of the most damaging areas of education, is communist atheist education, and it's very subtle in the sciences. One of the biggest examples is, for example, let's say Carl Sagan, my arch enemy in the world, even though he's passed away, teaching that basically people are just monkeys. That's what they teach kids. They teach kids that you're just a little smarter monkey than the ones out there in the jungle. And there's really no evidence for this, but it denies the person's spirit, that denies the person's soul. So it's very important for students to understand their identity, and that's something that they're not going to learn in school. In fact, it's something that the parents, in a lot of cases, never learned. So it's important. This course is for as much for parents as it is for students. And so that's K-12. You have to start with students when they're very young, when they're formative stages, when they're just starting in kindergarten, and how to recognize this, the atheist education that's being thrown at them, and how to defend themselves against this, because the schools are just horrific regarding science education. Okay, I have my water filters there. Still, the water filter elements are on sale. If you're looking for a water filter, I have directions on how to take plastic containers and make them into a water filter, because nobody has stainless steel containers anymore. They're just, because of the COVID thing, they're not available. So all my filter elements, the whole house water filters, are there for filtering water for the entire house. The wing generator, and not last but not least, the grow towers. That's something that people have been buying, very popular. So you can grow vegetables and things like tomatoes and cucumbers and lettuce and herbs in your own house. This is an amazing product line that I am now selling. So look there for the grow towers. And once again, the webpage, jmccsci.com. That's jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.